have it in because of our purchase authority in determining a catastrophe limit, because we might determine it's desirable to have a certain retention of loss and purchase of insurance of limits, but somebody might think it's not necessary, see? And so by having the word desirable there, it does, I think, add to our flexibility in making the most economical decision.
And one other question, if I might, Mr. Chairman, on page 4 of the bill, line 5, just so you can educate me a little bit, you talk about taking care of folks, excluding the situation where there's been a mysterious disappearance. I know that's, I know whether that's current language or not, I guess it is. Could you distinguish between theft and mysterious disappearance for me?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, mysterious disappearance is an event that someone thinks happened, but that cannot, doesn't, that they don't have evidence either of a break-in or any other evidence that, that supports the fact that something's lost. Definition of theft does normally exclude mysterious disappearance if you buy an insurance policy for theft. And we get a request from state agency and say, well, we had it here Friday when we left, it's not here today, and we don't know if it was taken home by someone or if some, you know, what happened to it. We are we generally liberally interpret that, but nevertheless, I feel we need that restriction in to prevent us from having to pay for losses if not, where there's no evidence that there's been any theft or burglary.
I'm not sure I understood that distinction, but now for the benefit of the committee, go ahead.
Further questions, Ms. Representative Springer? I looked right at you.
Let me start off an easy one. Professional liability fund of the Oregon State Bar is something that's created by statute. I assume at this point you folks don't have anything to do with that, and if this were adopted, you have no intention of getting involved in what the professional liability fund does.
That's correct.
Moving down to section 2, lines 24 through 26, where we talk about the department by rule or policy may determine the fund's contribution to the cost of defense settlements, judgments, in addition to claims for relief under the Tort Liability Act, I guess any other kind of relief that may be claimed. What's the purpose of that language?
Mr. Chairman, Representative. We have lawsuits filed against the state that are primarily in the area of contracts, mandamus actions, or actions that want a program stopped that maybe a state agency may have. And as a part of that, they allege a violation of the 42-1983 statute, which is civil rights, and we are required to provide protection. We want the ability to define the coverage provided by the fund on that particular type of claim or lawsuit. That's the purpose of having that the policy or that issue there.
Okay, I think that kind of leads me to my next question. We might as well lay it out on the table since you mentioned 1983, the Pink case. Mm-hmm. What's the policy now as far as Pink, and I, with specific reference to who pays the attorney's fees, and why it is that it was suggested that General Services Administration or these funds were not responsible for the attorney's fees.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer. At the time we took the fund over, we continued the practice of the Justice Department in strict interpretation of the statute, unless it was, there was an allegation of, and it was specifically filed under 42-1983, we were not involved or responsible for that. The Pink case is a Title VII case, and we have not received any information or advice that that is the type of claim that we would be responsible for under the existing statutes. That's a reason for us not.
Who, I assume it's the Attorney General's office that is the exclusive source of your legal advice.
That's correct.
And so it's a little hard for me to understand or pinpoint where it's stated in writing that you're not responsible for those costs. Or is this just some verbal opinion from the Attorney General's office that, no, you're not responsible for it?
Mr. Chairman, it wasn't a advice that we were not responsible for. It was advice more of the positive, that it's only the 1983 requirement that brings us into the program. Now, that doesn't mean that there couldn't be a subsequent opinion on that, but at the present time, that's the way we've been operating under strict interpretation of that statute.
What are your attorney's fees now to the Department of Justice over a two-year period? Can you estimate that?
Mr. Chairman, this biennium, the fees will run about $2.5 million. Next biennium, we expect them to be around $3
million. As it relates to Section 5, where you talk about the authority to, apportion the cost based upon factors which reflect the relative risk and loss experience of each state agency. That sounds like a pretty big job. I'm just kind of curious what you're talking about in terms of what you mean when you in-house are going to set up this system to apportion based upon those factors. And what additional staff are you going to require to do that? Apparently, you're asking for authority of the charge agencies for performing this service. What are we talking about in terms of new authority or just how this is going to be accomplished?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer, this authority already exists in the restoration fund, the property, and the liability fund areas. We had an actuarial study of both funds shortly after I took over this division. And as a part of that study, we asked the actuaries to provide to us a loss-sensitive premium allocation formula to use in allocating costs to state agencies. They did that. It's a program that's very similar to that used by insurance companies in determining premium charges. We take a agency's four-year loss experience compared to the state average, and if it's this is a simplified way, but basically if the loss per unit of a state agency is less than the state average, then they will receive a credit on the premium charges in the future. And the relative risk is generally defined as that, well, we consider the number of vehicles, for example, the property values, as a measure of the risk.
Unless there's something to
add. Excuse me, could I add, Mr. Chairman, we do have this on a computer, and so we're able to feed in the claims and the records and then use this formula, and so we're able to use the certain number of past years' experience and to generate those assessments fairly easily, and so we don't look for it to be an additional cost to make this more comprehensive.
Just a couple more.
No, go ahead.
The PLF is exempt from any kind of regulation by the insurance commissioner. I guess they call themselves a trust, not an insurance fund, but are you folks subject to any review by the insurance commissioner, or what relationship do you have with the insurance commissioner's office?
Mr. Chairman, these funds are actually established for internal use of the state of Oregon, primarily, and that it's involved with collection of premiums and charges or payment of losses as they accrue. It would be like it would be in the private sector. The insurance commissioner's office is interested in where the public is involved with insurance, and the amount of involvement with the public is limited to just a few public bodies, local public bodies, that we have at the present time. So we have reviewed this legislation with their office just to see if there have been any problems, and they have not with it.
Just a further question. I'm still not sure I understand what your relationship is going to be with Safe Corporation if this passes, and what individual agencies, how their relationship with Safe is going to be affected, if at all, if this legislation is passed. And maybe you can start out by giving me some ballpark figure how much money is spent by state agencies for their workers' comp coverage on an annual basis, if you know that figure.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the premium charges for state agencies are in the area of $8 million a year. At the present time, the premiums that the state agencies pay are based in five classifications and are paid to SAFE. The program we're envisioning is that we would represent the state in negotiating coverages in terms of premium payments, those kinds of issues, and we'd also be able to charge state agencies on a basis of their losses, and we would be able to do a more finite job of that allocation process than is presently being done. The relationship that we have with SAFE is one that that we would continue to work with them as required by the statutes, and would also be working with them in the area of their services that are provided to state agencies to make sure that the loss control services and are properly utilized by state agencies.
I guess, if I may, Mr. Chair, are you suggesting that loss control and charging agencies on the basis of their loss, that practice is something that SAFE is not now doing that you think needs to be corrected?
Mr. Chairman, SAFE is providing these services to state agencies at the present time, but there's no statutes that identify a state agency that has got the responsibility for working with them. And that is what we're proposing in this statute to define as the Department of General Services as being that state agency as a part of our overall risk management program.
Okay. Now, just to make it clear in my own mind, now you've got the state agency, be it Department of Transportation, which has a lot of vehicles and a lot of people out on the road, and that's where a lot of your accidents occur. They, if they need their coverage, which they do, they go directly to SAFE.
That's correct.
And you folks don't have any role.
That's correct.
And now you're asking to put yourself between the state agency and SAFE.
They would work through our agency with SAFE, right? And we would work with SAFE to make sure that the coverages that were required by the state agencies were required and proper.
Okay. I just want to make that clear, and I may have some later questions, and I'm sure the folks from SAFE will want to give us their thoughts, too. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Ms. Snyder.
Representative Jones.
A couple of questions. Currently, do you know what the relationship is between the amount of coverage that is self-insured as compared to commercial insurance in the state agency?
I don't have the figures, Representative Jones. I don't have the figures in front of me here, but I believe that the commercial insurance premiums that we pay are in the area of about $2.5 million a biennium. The premium charges to state agencies in the upcoming biennium are expected to be around $11 to $12 million. So we're looking at maybe 20% or 15 or 20% of our total program is commercial insurance.
Do you see a change occurring in that with your new role as proposed?
Mr. Chairman, yes, definitely. We would see that being reduced and more self-insurance being provided through the funds.
Less commercial, more self-insured.
That's correct.
One further question. I noticed that the relationship that currently exists with the executive department being the review body has changed to the general services, to your department being the review body. Have you had any opposition from other agencies within the state system or the executive department to your proposal?
Mr. Chairman, this proposal was requested by the executive department. They asked that we put this in our bill. They were approving a number of requests by state agencies, and they felt that we were in a better position to do that as part of our administration program. And they requested that we introduce this legislation.
Have other agencies, though, the other part of my question is, have you had opposition from other agencies in relationship to this proposal?
No.
Further questions? Gene, we've covered so much. We were discussing this coffee this morning. You give me an overview about 7:30 this morning, and Representative Mike Kopetsky was concerned about the section of in section 7, sub 10 on line 30, page 3. He was concerned about the separation of powers involved in this, the court's legislative administrative. Do you remember that conversation?
Yes.
Could you elaborate on that and assure this that there may be a question later on in this committee? Maybe we can nip it in the bud here.
Mr. Chairman, in on page 1, section 3, there's reference to state agencies that are required to buy their insurance through our program. The definition of state agency is that you cited on line 30 on page 3, the definition of state agency. We interpret that to mean every state branch, judicial, legislative, and executive, administrative.
Because there was, and it came back the same case, Dick, you were talking about, the lawsuit of the higher ed lawsuit. And Mike is very concerned, and I just want to make certain it was clear here. You had two amendments. You went into the First Amendment. I don't believe you really got into your proposed Second Amendment, which is a much longer one, which establishes a new Section 30, 31, and 32.
Mr. Chairman, the proposed amendment number 2 is an amendment to the existing statute 656.017, subsection 2. Which now states, this state shall provide compensation insurance for its employees through the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation. In discussing this issue with SAFE and our proposed legislation, it was felt that there was an ambiguity in our general authority in section 2 regarding our ability to self-insure, since it does state that General Services shall provide workers' compensation insurance. So to make sure that there was no misunderstanding, we have indicated that it doesn't matter what chapter 27, notwithstanding chapter 278, this statute still controls the source of our workers' compensation insurance program.
So you still deal through SAFE?
Exactly.
Are there any questions? Representative Jones, Delano Jones.
What change in the cost to the taxpayers of the state do you anticipate with this bill?
Mr. Chairman, we have identified a fiscal impact on this bill. We believe the overall savings would be in the area of $300,000 a biennium, primarily, and that is conservative. I believe that the savings could be much more. But we've targeted at $300,000 approximately.
And do you anticipate that savings being basically because of self-insurance as compared to commercial insurance coverage?
That's true, and also the ability to combine the two policies that we have for the two funds, the cash catastrophe policies.
Further questions? Thank you very much. I want to say, you're from SAFE, right, gentlemen here? You seemed a little excited there.
I'm sorry, Mr.
If you're going to speak, would you come out? Maybe these two folks could continue sitting there because you may say something that they have to answer, but please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Nestle. I am assigned from the Department of Justice to advise the General Services Department. And there were a number of things that did come up that I was interested in. For example, Representative Miller looked at the portion of Section 2 that authorizes the purchase of insurance as the department determines to be necessary or desirable, and I did wish to emphasize that that is already pre-existing language in ORS Chapter 278. And I think that the legislative intent behind that was, with regard to desirable, was to allow flexibility. There are times when the insurance market is tight, times when, on the other hand, the premiums are loose, and it was designed to permit the Department of General Services to adjust the proportion of private insurance or itself retain risk in order to take advantage of the market and thereby get the best break-off between the two exposures for the state as the market adjusts.
Questions? Thank you very much. Is there someone from SAFE here that might get excited and want to make a statement? I want to make sure this thing is clear. We will see this again on Friday, but we want to go into a work session on it. But we will take testimony because we're going to have a hearing and a possible work session. So, I beg your pardon?
We're from SAFE, that's clear to us. We're from SAFE, yes, that's clear to us.
Okay. A member from SAFE said that was clear to him. I guess that's all we have to put in the record. Representative Springer.
I guess I've got a follow-up question from Mr. Nestle, and then I do want to hear from SAFE. I don't know if they plan on testifying today or not, but I know Mr. Beckman just stepped from the room.
If you want to call him up, there's okay. No problem.
Mr. Nestle, let me take another cut at the question I asked Mr. Snyder. Where is it written or spelled out in statute or policy, either in the Department of Justice or GSA, who's responsible for what attorney's fees when a state agency is sued, whether it's a Title VII or Section 1983 or whatever?
Representative Springer, Mr. Chairman, actually there is no explicit statement of policy, as I understand it, and it is a derivation of the 1975 amendment to the Tort Claims Act, which said, in addition to the fact that the state and every public body would be liable for its torts, that as used in the Tort Claims Act, the word tort includes 42 U.S.C. 1983, violations of that specific civil rights law. And as I understand it, the long-standing interpretation of that has been that the specific mention of that civil rights statute is an implied exclusion of other civil rights statutes that don't fit into the traditional common law tort context, but nevertheless can create liabilities.
Does that 1975 statute speak specifically to Title 42, Section 1983?
Yes, Representative Springer, and that is the only federal civil rights statute that it speaks to.
And so you're applying Sutherland's rules of statutory interpretation to say that because that other title or section was not mentioned, ergo is not the intent to have that actions or claims for relief arising under that particular title of U.S. Code be covered by GSA or in its responsibility, notwithstanding the entire statutory scheme, which says if a state agency is sued, GSA is coordinating for responsible for coordinating with Department of Justice its defense.
Yes, I will say I haven't independently examined it. It's as I understand the history and the steady practice under the tradition.
Has this interpretation been stated in writing anywhere in an attorney general's opinion or?
Not with reference to that precise question, Representative. I myself, with another question that had to do with the Department of General Services authority to purchase insurance, have provided Mr. Snyder inferential information stating that rule of statutory construction, that the reference of one specific statute tends to imply an exclusion of others in the same area. But the direct question has not been presented.
Is there any suggestion that the statute needs further clarification in terms of a change in law, since that we're going strictly on what appears to be an oral interpretation by the Department of Justice?
Representative Springer, I think that it is an ambiguous statute as to what is meant. The Oregon Supreme Court has even held the word tort is probably one of the roughest to define in practice. And that's all we have is in this statute is the word tort and a reference to a single federal civil rights statute. So I would agree with it.
Do you know if the Department of Justice intends to introduce any legislation to try to clarify that?
I am not aware of any, Representative Springer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions of the committee? I think Representative Springer did indicate a desire to have SAFE come to testify.
I wasn't sure if I understood that they had nothing to say at this time, or if they had something to say, I guess I would suggest that we hear it now before.
Right. Would you like to identify yourself?
Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Beckham. I'm a SAFE Corporation. Be happy to answer any questions. As in the way of a little background, we met with Gene at the Department of General Services on Friday and had some discussions on this bill. Our concerns, I think he covered them very well on the proposed First Amendment on Section 3 regarding our ability to provide excess insurance, reinsurance, and that kind of thing. There was some discussion of whether or not there was an ambiguity created with 656017 sub 2 regarding our authority to insure state agencies. It was my understanding that at that time that no amendment of that would be necessary. It appears just from looking at the amendment, there doesn't appear to be any problem for us with that, but we'd like a chance to take a look at it and discuss it with General Services, but it appears there would be no problem. Be happy to answer any questions.
You will be back to clarify that on Friday.
Sure. We can get back with Gina and staff, too.
Any further questions?
Steve, what's your title again over there?
Corporate Relations Manager.
Okay. Mr. Reid can't be with us this morning, or do you know if he'd be available Friday morning?
I'm sure he could be here. Sure.
I'd like to ask that he be here.
Sure.
Have you reviewed this language or the proposed amendments with your attorney?
We discussed proposed amendments with our attorney on Friday. He has not, however, seen the final amendments.
And who's your attorney that's opposed?
Mr. Dave Almont with the Attorney General's Office.
Can I ask that, I'm sure you will review these with him prior to Friday, but
absolutely.
If necessary, can we have Mr. Almont here also?
I don't know his schedule, but I would assume that would be no problem.
Okay. Let me just close with this, and you may not have a complete answer today, but I'd like to know by Friday. This idea, now you guys deal one-on-one with the agencies, and if I understand General Services, they want authority to put themselves as a broker between the agencies and yourself. It seems to me they're implying that you folks aren't doing your job, or that somehow GSA has to come into this to, quote, protect the interests of the state agencies of the state. That kind of confuses me and troubles me both at the same time, right? It says you aren't doing your job, or there's something fishy here in River City in terms of why it is that GSA has to assume a responsibility it hasn't exercised in the past. And if not today, I'd like to hear your reaction to that and just what the problem is with SAFE and state agencies that apparently this bill is trying to correct.
I can give a brief overview on that. Gene, of course, is a much more accomplished risk manager than I, but basically all risk management programs involve a high degree of assignment of responsibility, authority, and accountability. And basically, any good risk management program is going to have a clear assignment of responsibility and authority and responsibility and accountability. And it appears in that respect that this would be a very positive thing, because currently you've got a situation, it's my understanding anyway, with state agencies where the person that, for example, our safety consultant may be working with does the risk management job as an adjunct to his or her regular responsibilities. And anytime you have that situation, you're going to have something that's less than effective. So if this bill, and it appears that this bill would go a long way to that end. So no, it's not a responsibility. I know, having talked to our safety people particularly, that it has been a source of frustration in the past, particularly like in years previously. I know where, back before the file and use days, when dividends were a significant factor, and let's say that Children's Services Division had an excellent loss control record and received a very handsome dividend, and another state agency did not, and their losses were very excessive. Well, all of that experience would just be thrown into a common pot, so obviously there was no incentive. And it's my understanding that the program will feature a kind of an individual breakout. So anything like that, those are kind of structural approaches to solving a risk management problem. So anything that would go towards resolving that would be a positive step.
Maybe I better just ask one question. Mm-hmm. Does SAFE treat state agencies just like anybody else, or is there in-house a separate part of SAFE that works specifically with state agency accounts?
We have, when we, as you know, we when we restructured and went to a branch office concept, we now have six different branches throughout the state, and each one of them is a complete service unit. They have all the services there. When we did that, we realigned the state agency service program at the same time, and we now have a full service team assigned to state agencies, and that is handled out of our Salem branch office. So those changes should be significant with the program as well, regardless of how the program is maybe structured under this bill.
Maybe we better have that state agency team manager over here Friday also.
Be happy to. Yeah.
That's only been in the past 6 months that you've adopted this new kind of way of dealing with state agencies.
I can't give you the exact dates, but I do know that the plan, it might be good to also address the plan itself, because the current plan that the state agencies are on is a different breed of cat. It's basically a self-rating thing because it's a control book of business. So that's different too. Those things are never very simple. I don't know how far you want to go into that. Well, we'd be happy to discuss any portion of that. Be happy to have. Would you like for him to be present to go over that?
I think I would.
Be happy to do it.
Mr. Snyder said that $8 million was an average or an approximation. Mm-hmm. How much of your overall premium does that represent?
Our estimated premium next year will be approximately $125 million, depending, of course, upon the competitive market. You know, that's always up for grabs. But our aggregate, we're projecting in terms of budgeting $125 million. But we'll see how we do in the market.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.